welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And I cannot emphasize the importance of education. This is an educational grassroots program. And so if you want to understand what we have to do and what we, the people at a grassroots level, need to get involved in, then you really need to understand the Constitution. And you don't have to become a constitutional lawyer. As a matter of fact, I would recommend that we get rid of lawyers. We would probably be better served. Anyway, that being said, as you know, we are in the Virginia ratification debates, and welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. I want to thank those who have reached out over the past couple of weeks. I've gotten a lot of feedback, and it seemed like when we first started, you know, with the scale of liberty and natural law and all those types of things could kind of set the foundation for, you know, getting to this point of this constitutional convention and then the ratification. And so when we built up to it, and when we started off with the ratification debates, I know a lot of people go, well, we were trying to tie and connect all the dots. And we want you to understand that there were states that actually just rubber stamped the Constitution. They didn't really debate it. They just said, we take it as it is, like Delaware. There were some states that, you know, said, well, we want to make amendments to this. We think that these things are important, but we accept the Constitution. But the states that actually debated it, that said, we see this as a problem. Well, those particular states, the one that didn't debate it, that probably would have given us all sorts of hyperbole and rhetoric regarding what the Constitution really was if Rhode Island would have debated the Constitution right up front. But they didn't. They wanted to have nothing to do with it. They wanted their autonomy. They wanted to be able to do whatever they felt they could do and would do, and not necessarily in the best interest of the Union and their people. They were Rogue Island. And so as we kind of look at the states that actually had some vigorous debates, like North Carolina, like Massachusetts, some of these debates were, you know, at a spiritual level, as we saw with Massachusetts. Some of these debates were in a more of a legal or commercial or what have you. And you can see how the tones had changed between them. So this really gives you a great snapshot of what the heck was going on in the country and how, you know, how their paradigms were focused. But I want to point out that the states that vigorously debated this the most were those states that were probably problematic as states in the Union itself. In other words, these were the fiefdoms. New York was a fiefdom. Virginia was a fiefdom. Now, Carolina was just a rogue entity. But some of these bigger states that had already acquired a bigger stick, North Carolina, these bigger states that acquired a bigger stick, they felt that, you know what, they're better off having their autonomy. And you can see why North Carolina chose not to go to the vote, and they decided to wait a year. Let's kick the tires after a year. So you can see who the real problems were. And so this is perfect segue, because in the last note that we were reading, we were listening to, this was Mr. Iredell, or not Iredell, I'm sorry, Mr. Nicholas. And this was kind of in response to Mr. Henry the day before. And Madison had just gotten up and gave all of his brilliant, you know, observations and assessments. And I love the fact how Madison calls out Patrick Henry of using hyperbole and basically saying he has not made any specific argument against this. He's just generalized, saying that the world is coming to an end without any facts. And so does that sound familiar? Does that sound like what progressives do today? Or self-serving politicians today. So anyway, what we're going to do is we're going to get into what Mr. Nicholas was stating at the very beginning. But before we can do that, I need to remind you that Republic Review is also a sponsor of this show. And so you can go to republicreview.org and see nothing. Republicreview.org. We keep on stating that this is sponsored by republicreview.org. This is a domain that we hold that belongs to the states. So when the states come along and we finally have a few states, or at least one state, that creates the center point, then we will bequeath them this domain so that as all of the states come on board, they will all have their own intermixings. If they want us to maintain it, actually, I would highly recommend that they just find somebody else as a third party, just a support entity to support all of the states so that each state can have their own input and have their own page and provide, you know, what they're focused on. So that it, as a mechanism to communicate to the people what they're doing in taking back the Republic. This is just a mechanism of basically communicating where they are, what they're doing, and how they've identified all of these problems. And so what better way to do this than to have this domain out there for them? This way they don't even have to worry about, you know, having just their own state, because if you have everything centralized, then it just makes it easier so that you can kind of on the mother or the base page kind of see what's happening and what the most current action is by which states and so forth. Because then you don't have to go to every single state. And what we want to do is we want to actually start tying the closed circuit television feeds to this domain as well, so that this becomes a real good focus for this activity that I believe the states would have interest in. What, you know, once they get through all of this process, once we get to 27 states, once we get the federal government into compliance, this could be a great portal, because Republic Review may be an action, but it is a paradigm that the states are the overseers of the Constitution. And this provides them kind of a coalesced and or a collective medium to, as they work together, that they can constantly interface. What we want to do is not only get the federal government into compliance, but we want to create what the states never did, what Madison, Hamilton, and the rest of them, during and beginning of the constitutional ratification, the Federalist Papers, and so forth. I mean, it was Hamilton that said the states needed to create barriers. And so the Republic Review domain should be that barrier, so that they're constantly reviewing, so that the Republic is constantly watching what the federal government is doing. We can no longer afford to let them basically say, oh, we know what we're doing and we have the authority to do this, because we don't have to accept them telling us that they have the authority. We are, as states, the states are the judges and jury over that Constitution. And so I gave you a little bit more view of what republicreview.org really is. But I think, you know, we do this every once in a while, but it doesn't happen very often when we kind of give you the, just like the music that I use. I don't talk about all these little things that kind of have these nuances that actually have meaning. They're significant. And so we will get into those other things. But I'm glad I was getting some feedback. I've actually got quite a bit of feedback. As we got into the North Carolina debates, the feedback started coming. So people started really liking some of these things that were being exposed, and some of these things that they, wow, you know, that is very powerful. This is why you want to pull all of these podcasts in and basically create a playlist from March 29th on till probably into June. We will have the ratification debates for you, you know, already created, so that all you got to do is put a playlist in and you can play these things and get yourself Nero so that you can cut out, you know, all of these monologues. If you just want to focus on, and that's what you really need to do, is focus on the ratification debates. You know, there's editorializing that I provide, but I think some of that's valuable. Some of it may be, you know, not valuable for you. You just want to hear the what the framer said. It's kind of like reading the Bible. You can either read the scriptures or read what people say about the scriptures. I mean, that's why some people go to church, right? Is just to hear what other people say instead of, you know, reading the scriptures. I believe that reading the scriptures or reading the ratification debates is foremost. Having other editorializing and so forth is nice and can provide good insight. But you got to read the scriptures. You got to read the ratification debates, okay? So anyway, you're listening to The Only Show that gives you the academic evidence that will provide you everything you need to know of what we have to do and why we have to be doing this. And so we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And so if you have any questions, comments, just give us a dial. If you got a question and you know, I can answer it. When we get to that point in time where we aren't dealing with content, we will actually respond. We will keep it there in the queue. And I will probably get back to you just to answer your questions so you're not sitting there waiting. And so this way, you know, we can actually help, because the questions that you have are likely questions that other people have. So don't be afraid to ask, because somebody else may have that same question, but they may be afraid to ask. So anyway, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what I want to do really quick before we actually get into reading, and forgive me, but you need to know that that lawsuit against Congress is moving forward. And so as soon as we have more news, but I just want you to know Congress's time is up and Congress did not respond. So now we're heading back into court. Bob Schultz is heading back into court, and he will be pursuing the remedy. So basically he's asking for a default judgment. So we'll let you know how it all goes. But I will tell you this, that it is going before a judge. We already have the judge assigned, and the judge happens to be, well, hold on. I think I can actually pull it up real quick
You know, there's no such thing as real quick, right? Anyway, I will try to pull it up if I can. And it's Bob Schultz's update right here. And it is going before Dabney Friedrich, F-R-I-E-D-R-I-C-K, Friedrich. And so she is a Trump-appointed federal judge in the D.C. District Court. So there you go, huh? I just want you to know that we may actually have a new president within the next couple of months. Keep your fingers crossed if you say your prayers and at least go to the petitions page on Reclaiming the Republic and start getting state attorney generals engaged. If we got two attorney generals engaged on this, this would actually force it to go straight to the Supreme Court, because what will happen is, I believe, if Dabney basically orders Congress to do their job and to call them out for violating the, Constitution and forcing them to exercise the 12th Amendment, then Congress will probably, wave their nose at her and basically say, we don't have to do what you tell us. Then it'll force it to go to the Supreme Court. And so, if the Supreme Court actually weighs in, and so we can actually bypass this if we got two attorney generals to get this thing done before this fall. Because look at all the damage Biden is doing. Now, we've been trying to get this into the hands of other news cycles, and it's all falling on deaf ears. So if it's not you carrying the message, then who will it be? If we're the ones doing the fighting, we have to talk about the fight. We have to talk about, these battles and the fact that we've won so far moving forward. Anyway, let me just get into the Virginia ratification basis. So this would be the spot where you would, delete everything before and just now listen to all, list or play everything going forward. Anyway, so let me just reread what we said in our previous episode. It's just a paragraph. This is Mr. Nicholas. Mr. Chairman, if the resolution taken by the House of going regular through the system, clause by clause, had been followed, I should confine myself to one particular paragraph. But as to my surprise, the debates have taken a turn. I shall endeavor to go through the principal parts of the argument made use of by the gentleman in opposition to the proposed plan of government. The worthy gentleman entertained us very largely on the impropriety and dangers of the powers given by this plan to the general government. But his argument appears to me inclusive and inaccurate. It amounts to this, that the powers given to any government ought to be small. I believe this, sir, is a new idea in politics. Powers being given for some certain purpose ought to be proportionate to that purpose, or else the end for which they are delegated will not be answered. It is necessary to give powers to a certain extent to any government. If a due medium or not observed in the delegation of such powers, one of two things must happen. If they be too small, the government must molder and decay away. If too excessive, the people must be oppressed. As there can be no liberty without government, it must be as dangerous to make powers too limited as too great. Now he gets into this commission idea where he talks about the Confederation. And he says, he tells us, now he's talking about Patrick Henry. And remember, Patrick Henry was the huge defender of the cabal, of the fiefdom of Virginia. He wanted to see the powers of Virginia be retained so that they would not be encumbered by a general government. They didn't care about the Union. The Union was just lipstick on a pig. And that's how they treated it. So Mr. Nicholas goes on and says, he tells us that the Constitution annihilates the Confederation. Did he not prove that every people had a right to change their government when they should be deemed inadequate to their happiness? Now, I have told you, and I mentioned this before, regarding the John Birch Society and how they talk about the runaway convention. Were these men truly running away by their own designs, of completely abandoning their responsibility of fixing the government? No, These men had, there's no doubt in my mind, all of these men had a very, very serious vision of what really needed to happen and how inadequate the Articles of Confederation were. And they did something that was completely unique and different. They appealed to God. The only other time where I think God was involved in the establishment of a government was probably when Moses was working with his father-in-law and, you know, sought God's assistance as well in creating a government for Israel. Because there has probably never been such an earnest and sincere desire by the hearts of the men involved, by those delegates who were seeking to do the right thing. And this is what they gave us. And I am here to tell you that what they gave us was not something that they concocted. This was the results of the inspiration of the divine hand of providence, which they all attested to. This is an epoch, my friends. And as a matter of fact, we've heard the language already used, that this truly was an epoch. Moving on, this is what Mr. Nicholas says. He says, the Confederation being found utterly defective, will he deny our right to alter or abolish it? But he objects to the expression, we the people. Remember I told you that. Remember I said he objected to that. And so that's why when we read with what Madison said, Madison basically came in and said, well, who are the parties to it, right? And he said, not we the people, but we the people of the, I'll be very specific. Madison said this, who are the parties to it? The people, but not we the people composing of one great body, but the people of composing 13 sovereignties. You see, these men understood as a republican form of government with constitutions, they have delegated the powers in creating these sovereign bodies called the states. These weren't just, you know, zones of people living like a community without any organization. Each of these states were pretty well organized, and they were identified as sovereigns, okay? And so this is how Nicholas also piles on. This is the following day. Madison had already basically gave, you know, Henry the uppercut. And so here's, the hook that, you know, it's coming from the right or the left from Nicholas. And he says, but he objects to the expression, we the people, and demands the reason why they had not said, we the United States of America, in my opinion. Now, by the way, the original writing on that document stated, we the people of the state of Delaware, the state of, and listed all 13 states. But they realize that there may not be one or two of those states that may come along, Rhode Island or what have you. And so what do you do about that? You can't keep, they didn't have, oh, well, we can just print it out again. They didn't have, you know, the capability of just printing out all these different variations of versions, right? Everything was written by hand. And or they did have printing presses, but that was even more arduous. So what they did do is that they basically went to a Stiles committee right before the Constitution was signed. And the Stiles committee changed that long, huge paragraph introduction down to we the people. And the reason that they did that was basically as the ratification was going out to the people to identify their representatives in convention, again, Republican form of government, the states, the Constitution was not ratified by the people. It was ratified by their representatives. Do you understand? When you hear people say, oh, well, the Constitution was ratified by the people. No, they're wrong. The people chose their representatives. The representatives went and heard the arguments and made the decision for those who they represented. There was no democracy involved. This has never been a democracy. This has been a pure Republican form of government since 1776. When they decided to have lunch, I'm sure that the senators sent a delegate to represent them in deciding what they were going to have for lunch and when and where. Right? I mean, they were so Republican in so many different ways, they had little conventions and meetings to decide all sorts of little things. so that the people or those involved in other work did not have to be bothered by every nuance of the day. Anyway, let me move on. He says, in my opinion, the expression is highly proper. It is submitted to the people because on them it is to operate. Till operated, it is but a dead letter and not binding to anyone. When adopted, it becomes binding on the people who adopted it. It is proper on another account. We are under great obligations to the Federal Convention. Well, I'm sorry, we'll have to pick this back up where we left off. But maybe I'm doing too much editorializing because I've only gotten one thing done. And I'm hoping this helps you understand, because a lot of times we, the people, it gets glossed over. And even here, he's not really clear about a Republican form of government, but we'll be right back after these two promos. Stay tuned. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me read on. And Mr. Nicholas says this: we are under great obligations to the Federal Convention for recurring to the people, the source of all power. The gentleman's argument militates against himself. He says that persons in power never relinquish their powers willingly. If then the state legislatures would not relinquish part of their powers they now possess to enable a general government to support the union, reference to the people is necessary. Do you understand what he just said? That's right. He basically said because the states were unwilling to relinquish any of their power to create a perpetual union, then the necessity was to take the issue back to the people so that the people were aware to say, hey, we need to do this, and the states have not been willing to do this for the past 6 years. And we are looking at the danger of our own doom, of being subjugated by France, Spain, and or Britain, or maybe even all three as they come and divide and conquer us. Because that was what was going to happen if we could not seriously pay our debt. Remember, 1790 was just around the corner. This is 1787. So 3 years away, the French Revolution, and what happens? Napoleon Bonaparte rises to power. And as Napoleon Bonaparte looks at his treasury and says, we are poor, and look who owes us all this money. America. And he would have came, he would have kicked butt, and he would have conquered America. Or he would have worked with, because he was already working with Spain. Remember, he owned the Louisiana Territory that we bought from. And the only reason we were able to buy the Louisiana Territory is because we did create this new government that was able to pay its bills, pay its debt, and even buy the land from sea to shining sea. And develop it into this unfathomable republic that these framers had no idea what was going to happen. But I think they did understand, or they at least saw that the corruption would slowly creep in. I mean, it's what happens. Anyway, Mr. Nicholas goes on and says, "We are in the next place frightened by two sets of collectors who," he tells us, "will oppress us with impunity. The amount of the sums to be raised of the people is the same, whether the state legislatures lay taxes for themselves or for the general government, whether each of them lays and collects taxes for its own exclusive purposes. The manner of raising it only is different so far as the amount of the impost may exceed that of the present collections, so much will the burdens of the people be less." Now, you got to remember, the federal government got most of all their money from the imported goods. That's where they were taxing materials coming in. What did that do? That made American goods cheaper. And so it helped build the economy of the United States. And as we were still buying things from Europe, whether they be raw goods or refined goods, didn't matter. The federal government was making money off of that. So there was a symbiotic relationship in the economy as the federal government managed and regulated the commerce of foreign trade, because that was their focus. Foreign, outward looking. They did not have the ability to regulate what a state did and how they would make a light bulb or a toilet. To be clear, the states were able to actually not only pay off their debts, but the states became better off and stronger because they were able to, tax on their productivity, and the federal government was able to tax on the incoming trade. Anyway, money cannot be, money cannot be raised in more judicious manner than by imposts, taxing the goods coming in. It is not felt by the people. It is a mode which is practiced by many nations. 9/10 of the revenue of Great Britain and France are raised by indirect taxes, and they were raised by direct taxes. They would be exceedingly oppressive. At present, the reverse of this proposition holds in this country, for very little is raised by indirect taxes. Anyway, we can go on and on, but miss down a little bit further. We could probably go a few pages, about 2 pages. Mr. Nicholas is going on and on, and now he talks about something called martial law. Oh, hey, guess what? The first time martial law has been discussed in the ratification debates. You can see why Virginia is so meaty, because they actually got into issues that no other state got into. And he said, and to be honest, you have to give credit to Mr. Henry and George Mason, these brilliant men that were able to try to concoct these concepts to create doubt against the Constitution and ratifying it. So as these men started, making these disparaging comments and or blatant assertions, guess what? The arguments came forth as this is how this really is. And so this is what Mr. Nicholas says. "But it is complained that they may suspend our laws. The suspension of the writ of habeas corpus is only taken in place in cases of rebellion or invasion." You understand? There are two different things. Insurrections or rebellion in the United States is when they act. So that's the only two times when they can take away your writ of habeas corpus. And so that was when the Civil War, but the Civil War wasn't rebellion. It was actually states seceding. So when Lincoln and Congress actually suspended the habeas corpus, it wasn't because of rebellion. And so they had no right to actually declare martial law. This is, and going back on to Mr. Nicholas, this is necessary in those cases. In every other case, Congress is restrained from suspending it. In no other case can they suspend our laws. I want to emphasize this so much importance so that you understand that what we're talking about is, you know, what we've gone through with COVID and what the heck is going on, and Biden trying to get involved in suspending our laws. I'm going to repeat this. The suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. Now, that's only, you know, the charges against a person. Suspending that so they can imprison you for as long as they want without actually having you charged and putting you in front of a judge and basically having a swift and timely trial is only taking place in cases of rebellion or invasion. This is necessary in those cases. In every other case, Congress is restrained from suspending it. In no other case can they suspend our laws. So what he just said is, for a pandemic, Congress cannot suspend our laws. For a pandemic, the states cannot suspend our laws because of the 14th Amendment, Section 1. States cannot make or enforce any laws that abridge the immunities and privileges guaranteed to U.S. citizens by the United States Constitution. I'm paraphrasing, but that's it, folks. They had no constitutional right. Everybody that has taken away your right to work, taken away your right to go and assemble in whatever means you want as a community, or go and practice your religious expression with your faith in an assembly or whatever, they have no right to do that. They have no right to take away your right to commerce. They have no right. And they have violated the Constitution. And what's it going to take to get you upset enough to get involved and get involved with Republic Review very specifically? But anyway, I should be actually poking you as we go through these. Every time we have this salient point, I should say, what's it going to take, folks? What is it going to take before you get involved with Republic Review? Anyway, and this is a most estimable security. But the influence of England and the other northern states is dreaded. There are apprehensions of their combining against us, not to advert to the improbability or illiberty of this idea. It is supposed that our population will, in a short period, exceed theirs, as their country is well settled, and we have very extensive uncultivated tracts. We shall soon, as a matter of fact, because Ohio, look at all the countries that came, or states that came out of Virginia, technically the countries, Ohio, Iowa, Kentucky, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee. I mean, all sorts of states came out of Virginia. We shall soon outnumber them as a great degree as they do us at this time. Therefore, this government, which I trust will last to the remotest ages, will be very shortly in our favor. Treason consists of levying war against the United States or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and or comfort. Now, I want you to understand, treason is waging or levying war. And what is levying war against the United States? Violating the Constitution. It doesn't mean that you have to be adhering to enemies. You can be an enemy against the Constitution, and you are committing treason. But this paradigm has been completely watered down. This is why I believe, because the way they've redefined things in the court systems and so forth, it's atrocious. But to be clear, to be very clear, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment simplified this entire process of getting rid of corrupt politicians who were literally committing treason, but now we can get rid of them because they're violating their oath by not supporting the Constitution. That's why we get into the Constitution and those details of Section 3 and the 14th Amendment and so forth. But we're going into a promo, so we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Set the record straight. Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so we were just talking about treason. He was just going over this, and he says the punishment regarding treason and the punishment of this well-defined crime is to be declared by Congress. No oppression, therefore, can arise on this ground. This security does away with the objection that most grievous oppressions might happen under the color of punishing crimes against the general government. The limitation of the forfeiture to the life of the criminal is also an additional privilege. And so moving on, we now go to Madison regarding the safety of the union. And so what I wanted to, in the real highlight here, is that if you kind of read the ratification debates, you'll get little things like this. And this is where they basically say, Mr. Madison then recapitulated many instances of the prevalent persuasion of the wisest patriots of the states that the safety of all America depended on union, and that the government of the United States must be possessed of an adequate degree of energy, or otherwise their connection could not be justly denominated a union. He likewise enumerated the expedients that had been attempted by the people of America to form an intimate association from the meeting at New York in the year of 1754 downwards, and that their sentiments on this subject had been uniform both in their colonial and independent conditions, and that these variety of causes had hitherto prevented the adoption of an adequate system. So, in other words, basically he was just pointing out that from 1794, and this was kind of a summary, this was an encapsulated summary that was done by the scribes of the ratification debates. Many times they actually captured word for word, but in particular, they just kind of said, okay, well, Madison went on for a long period of time, and they just kind of summarized it in one little short paragraph. Fact of the matter is, as of 1754, the sentiments of the people of the colonies were to create a union, not necessarily to create a single nation, but to create a blending, a hybrid, a confederacy, and or a hybrid confederacy republic or federation. And so they created both a federation and maintained the Confederacy. This is why it's important to understand what kind of government we really have, because we do not have federalism. We only have federalism on very few issues. We have a confederacy because each state has its own sovereignty over many things. And the only thing that we have a federated issue as states together are those few things within the Constitution. This is why when I hear people talk about federalism, I think that, you know, they're making far more out of those enumerated powers than actually should exist. And so when you hear people talk about federalism and getting back to federalism, you know, they don't really understand. They do not understand how limited the general government is, because federalism only incorporates war and national security and or the taxation of how the federal government is to, you know, function or pay for its operations and its relationship with the only other thing within federalism would be the militia. But when it comes to state properties and so forth, that's not federalism. That's confederacy. In other words, each state has its own sovereignty over its own lands, and what it chooses to do with it is its own business. So anyway, there's a lot of misnomers when we start talking to conservatives, and that's just because too many conservatives look at the federal government and say, well, it's legitimate. It's not. It's not legitimate based on our Constitution. So why would they give that allowance? Why? And to tell you the truth, these aren't true conservatives. They aren't true constitutional understanding conservatives. So now we go to Mr. Lee of Westmoreland, and he talks about the militia. And what day are we on? We're on June 7th. Now, the militia really heats up in discussion when we get into like June 13th, 14th, the 15th, 16th, actually, I think 15th was a Sunday. So the 13th and 14th was like Friday, Saturday, and then they got back into it on the 16th. And so Mr. Westmoreland brings up the militia, and he tells us that he's a staunch Republican and adores liberty. Our men fighting with the troops of that king, whom he so much admires, I often seen proofs of the wisdom of that paper on your table, the Constitution. I've seen incontrovertible evidence that the militia cannot always be relied upon. I could enumerate many instances, but one will suffice. Let the gentleman recollect the action of Guilford. The American regular troops behaved there with the most gallant intrepidity. What did the militia do? The greatest number of them fled. Their abandonment of regulars occasioned the loss of the field. Had the line been supported that day, Cornwallis, instead of surrendering at Yorktown, would have laid down his arms at Guilford. And so what he was basically saying was, see, Washington had a militia that had been federalized, and those men that he wanted to keep, you know, because some of them went home during winter quarters and so forth. Some of them actually went home, and they were not the regulars. But the bottom line was, under this Constitution, that Congress could federalize the militia and make an army out of them. So you got to understand that this is very important, that when you talk army, the source of the army was the militia. It is synonymous. When they created a regular army, so in other words, they pulled these guys up and they said, you're going to be up here for 2 years because we're going to fight a war. And if Congress decides to perpetuate that war, remember the process of, you know, standing up against that war would be to vote these people out to say, we don't want to have anything to do with this war. And that would end the war just like that. But what Congress had the power to do is they had the power to federalize and create an army and span it for however long the war was to be fought. In this context, he was identifying that there were militias that came up to supplement the army. They did not have the regular training and the discipline, which is why they ran and hid. And so I'm bringing this up as a really good point for you to understand that there's the context of militia and army is synonymous, and that the perspective of having an army and then bringing up militia supplements, it's the same thing in the Marine Corps or the Army today with the reserves. When you have a regular fighting force and you bring reserves in, the discipline of the reserves is completely different. They, you know, these guys haven't been under the full control of every minute of their life as, you know, as a soldier or as a Marine or as a sailor and so forth. When I joined the Marine Corps, I had to have permission to get married. And I had to have permission if I wanted to go off base. I had to have a chit. It was called a liberty chit. To be able to go off base, I had to have my liberty chit. And if I got caught without it, I was going to the brig. The military, still to this day, is the perfect form of communism because it's voluntary. But you have no control over your life. Well, in the reserves, you have control over what you do when you're not in drills. But when you're in drills, they have full control. And if they activate you, then they have full control over you because that's the risk of being a military reservist. You can be activated. And then all of a sudden, you know, your lack of discipline goes out the window and you begin to start learning discipline and, you know, the magnitude of orders and following orders and so forth. Anyway, we want to go on because Mr. Lee of Westmoreland also goes on and starts talking about enumeration. And this is what he says. He says, I say that this new system shows in stronger terms than words could declare that the liberties of the people are secure. It goes on the principle that all power is in the people and that the rulers have no powers but what are enumerated in that paper. When a question arises with respect to legality of any power exercised or assumed by Congress, it is plain on the side of the governed. Is the enumerated in the Constitution, or I should say, is it enumerated in the Constitution? If it be, it is legal and just. It is otherwise arbitrary and unconstitutional. My friends, I've been telling you that the money that they spend on unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers is illegal. They have no right to create this debt. This debt must be ended. The federal government must be seized and placed back into the framework of the Constitution. All this unconstitutional government needs to be dismantled. That's what Republic Review does. It dismantles all of the powers that are not enumerated and brings those powers back to the states. The funding goes away. The debt goes away with it. Once they go through the audit, they're going to be able to audit every dollar that has been spent because every year the federal government identifies its outlays. If by happens that less than $2 trillion, because that's what the government brings in legitimately in its taxes on average, is about $2.2 trillion, at least since the 2000s. And so when you look at what we've spent on war and the things that are enumerated within the Constitution, would the $2 trillion cover the actual cost of the legitimate enumerated powers of the federal government? If it did, then every penny that they've taken on since then, for debt in paying for unconstitutional government actually is illegal, and we're not accountable for it. And we're going to find out that all of that debt will be wiped away. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.